Coming up next, Common Ground. The interview by Phyllis Kriegel, originally scheduled for this time slot, will not be heard today. Instead today, Common Ground will feature Mother Jones editor Adam Hochschild interviewing Carolyn Marshall about her research on the drug Benedictine. Benedictine is a commonly prescribed anti-nausea drug given to millions of pregnant women. But the drug may have some dangerous side effects.
Hello, my name is Adam Hochschild. I'm an editor at Mother Jones Magazine. And with me today is Carolyn Marshall, who is the co-author of an article called The Benedictine Cover-Up, which appears in the November issue of Mother Jones. Carolyn, let me begin by reading a letter which was received at the magazine from someone who read your article, which is as follows. On May 28th, I gave birth to my first child. He was born at 1:55 p.m. After 12 hours of labor, my baby turned and was coming breech, which required a cesarean section. At 3 o'clock, I found out that my little Jason had a problem. They told me he had encephalocele, which is where part of the brain is on the outside of the body. 5 specialists checked him over. They said there was nothing that could be done. They said that he would live for 8 hours. 2 days later, I transferred him back to the hospital. For 19 days, my family and I visited Jason twice a day, and we watched him die an ounce or two a day. Then I read about your article. Yes, I did take the drug Benedictine for nausea. Was this something which had to do with the problem that my child had? Here is this letter from a woman who's taken the drug Benedictine. I know it can't be said for certain that this particular drug had to do with the problem, that the birth defect that her child was born with, but you do charge in this article that this drug has caused many thousands of birth defects around the world. What kind of information do you base those charges on?
Well, there are scientists on both sides of the controversy. Some say Benedictine is a teratogen, meaning that it produces monster-like babies, and others say that it's safe. There are lots of studies. The ones that say that the drug is safe have been, for the most part, financed by Richardson Merrill. They are methodologically unsound, which indicates that the control groups are too small, or not enough numbers have been done, or they test animals that are so unlike humans that it's hard to make a comparison. Then there are some studies, newer studies. Most of them are truly independent studies. They have not been financed by the company. They are large, what they call epidemiological studies done on thousands of mothers. They look at records. And those studies seem to indicate that there is an association between the drug and a variety of birth defects, limb reductions, skeletal defects, heart problems, missing hands, missing feet, missing ears, and you name it. And I think that there is enough evidence to show that the drug hasn't been proven safe and enough evidence to show that the drug hasn't been proven effective.
Now, Benedictine, is it not the most commonly taken drug for nausea during pregnancy?
It is the only drug indicated for nausea and vomiting on the American market. 30 million women have taken it since, or have been prescribed the drug since, in the past 23 years. 1.5 million women are prescribed the drug yearly, and if a most recent study indicates correctly that two to five out of 1,000 babies will be deformed as a result of this drug, that means 140,000 babies have been deformed in 23 years.
So 140,000 babies have been born with things like missing arms or legs, or problems with their heart, or this thing like the baby in the letter that we just read with the brain on the outside of the body. How could that be allowed to happen if something is causing defects on such a wide scale to the level of 140,000 cases? Why was it not caught before now?
Well, our investigation shows that there is a very questionable relationship between the Food and Drug Administration and the pharmaceutical industry. The pharmaceutical industry has free access to high-level officials at the FDA. They're in and out of there every day. Consumers who write letters and get computer responses back. There are many people within the Food and Drug Administration, high-level officials, who were with pharmaceutical companies and who obviously haven't left their loyalties behind.
So it's the old sort of revolving door syndrome,
right,
that we're so familiar with in Washington. Mm-hmm. Are there cases where a high FDA official has been given a much higher paying job by a drug company after rendering a judgment that was favorable to that drug company while this person was in the FDA?
Oh, yeah, I'm sure there are many cases. There's a questionable case in our story where one of the officials who originally said the drug was ineffective and unsafe was promoted, and then he was the person who signed off on it to make a recommendation to high-level officials to put it on the market. I also wanted to say that many reviewers have looked at the drug at the FDA. At least four, according to our investigation, have said the studies submitted for safety and efficacy are inadequate and don't show that the drug is safe. And for some reason, I don't know why, high-level officials have upped its grading and given it the most effective rating possible.
So in other words, you're saying that on this apparently very dangerous drug, there have indeed been enough studies done to show that it's not safe, or at least to raise serious questions about its safety. But these studies have been deliberately shunted aside by people in the Food and Drug Administration.
That's the way it appears from the investigation,
right.
Yeah. And I should also say that lots of money has been shuffled around. Of the studies that say it's safe, we're talking about thousands of dollars deposited into, you know, Canadian accounts, dollars deposited into universities for future research, and just general funding.
How does that happen exactly? Like a drug company like Richardson Merrill, which makes Bendectin, and incidentally, they were also the manufacturer of thalidomide also, weren't they?
Right.
How do they generate a study proving that a drug is safe when they need this for their promotional purposes? It has to be done in a sort of delicate way, right, because one's dealing with doctors and scientists, but yet, in effect, it is a sort of a bribe, isn't it?
It seems to be a bribe. I mean, certainly some of the doctors that we talked to who received money said that that money had absolutely no effect on their research. Meanwhile, you know, they were visited weekly by Merrill. I mean, Merrill would fly out, Richardson Merrill officials would fly out from Cincinnati to Oakland, of all places,
mm-hmm.
And visit constantly, phone every other day, write very cordial letters. And it's hard for me to believe that that doesn't somehow compromise one's relationship to the industry.
I mean, obviously, I assume they wouldn't be so stupid as to actually offer somebody money on the condition of their finding a favorable report on this drug. But is there sort of the implication in these relationships that the company has with outside researchers that if the results of your study are favorable, we could maybe come up with some more money for another project you're working on? Is that sort of how it's done?
It seems to be done that way in some cases. I think some cases the physicians are leading, egging on the industry. In our story, there's one particular researcher, his name is Smithels, who said, you know, that with favorable results, which will help you in the California courts, I'm sure you'll want to give me some more money. That's not the verbatim, but that was the gist of his letter. And Merrill gave him $26,000 plus an additional $1,500 deposited into an account. And I believe the company has a long history of, well, not a long history, but has a history of paying people for studies. And it's hard to obtain documents that indicate that they are doing it as a bribe, but it looks that way.
If somebody, I suppose the moral of the story really is that in medical research, as in so much else, there's more money to be made by working for the bad guys than for the good guys, because the good guys often don't have any money at all. If somebody is a medical researcher who wants to do some research which looks as if it may prove that some drug is highly dangerous, in fact, is it not more difficult for he or she to get money to do that kind of study than if they're doing a study that looks as if it's going to prove something is safe?
Well, yeah, I mean, obviously it's much easier to get money from a company if they're going to say that the thing is okay. I don't know if that answers the question, but
Yeah, I guess there aren't that many other places that they could get funds from. The federal government, maybe. But then you're saying that the FDA is probably just as guilty as the company in this thing. Right.
Well, the prime funders of research on pharmaceuticals is the pharmaceutical industry. Any researcher will tell you that. And that's just the way the system is. The FDA can't give out a lot of money to provide research because actually that's not their function. Their function is not to do research. They're supposed to be there to protect consumers, and the burden of proving a drug safe and effective is on the company. And obviously they've got millions of dollars tied up in these products, and hundreds of millions of dollars tied up in these products, and they're going to shell out as much money as they can to find the kind of researchers they want to. We have documents, it's not in the story, but they made an international search for, you know, European scientists. They fly all over the country, all over the world, looking for people to do their studies. And my guess is that they'll pay people any amount of money they need or want. And any number of companies can be giving money at one time to one person for the same drug.
Hmm. Well, I think most people don't realize that is, in fact, how medical research is done, that it's all pushed by the drug companies that they make every effort to bring about the results that they want from it. Now, since your story was published, Richardson Merrill, the drug company involved, has attacked it rather harshly. And I have here a letter which says that, which calls the article that you co-authored false and misleading.
They're lying.
They're lying. Okay, why are they lying?
Well, because we've got the goods on them. We've got the documents that show that, I stand by the story. Everything in it is a fact. There's a document to back up everything that we say. They withheld information from the Food and Drug Administration for 20 years. It came out in the Florida courts that they covered up damaging evidence that, in fact, showed that the same kind of defects showed up with Bendectin as showed up with thalidomide. They are now saying that those documents were there all the time. Hmm. And in fact, the FDA is covering them too, because the FDA says that, that's right, we went back to the files and Merrill is right, they were there all the time. Now, I don't know why they're both lying, because we have, there are depositions out of courtroom cases where people are supposed to tell the truth, and under oath, people have said that a sanitized version was submitted to the Food and Drug Administration, and an independent pharmacologist looked at the evidence and showed that, in fact, they had sort of misinterpreted or carelessly omitted certain evidence.
Who do you think is the biggest villain here? Is it Richardson Merrill, the drug company, or is it the Food and Drug Administration? Or is it hard to separate the two?
It's very hard to separate the two. There are a couple of problems. I mean, first of all, the drug industry clearly doesn't feel that they have to adhere to the, you know, Hippocratic Oath. They may be physicians, but I don't think that they consider themselves healers and doctors. They're businessmen. And I can't blame them for that, I guess, but that's a problem with, ethically, they don't have the same morals and values as people at the FDA. The Food and Drug Administration are supposed to protect consumers, and it's their responsibility. It's not as if their own, their own reviewers have said this drug is okay. So I would say that I'm completely disappointed with the Food and Drug Administration. I cannot believe that they have ignored what their reviewers have said.
Hmm.
The drug has not been proven safe. It is not necessarily effective. They've got 20% of the adverse reaction reports in their files, and they know that 72% of the adverse reaction reports in Merrill's files show limb reductions, which is a sign that it may be causing birth defects. And the FDA has the ability to take the drug off the market. While one may want to blame Richardson Merrill, because it's always nice to point a finger at a corporation, in this case, I think that the power lies with the Food and Drug Administration. And all they have to do is take it off the market, ban it, or at least suspend it. Suspend sale of the drug until we know what the scientific evidence
certainly
is.
Sounds like the sensible thing to do, given all the studies that you cite. Carolyn, I'd like to ask you a little bit now about some of the things that have happened since the article. You mentioned when we were chatting before the show began that Richardson Merrill has been so afraid of lawsuits by mothers and fathers of kids who were born with birth defects as a result of taking this drug, that they've actually sent detectives following one medical researcher. What happened there?
Well, the firm hired a private eye to drudge up dirt on one of the foremost teratologists in the world. His name is William McBride. And they have also hired a private eye to follow, and there is rumor that they even threatened a woman by the name of Jeanette Sherman, who was supposed to testify but didn't testify. I believe she's got a lawsuit going against Merrill now for their activities. And obviously their intent is to discredit the few people who are on the anti-Bendectin side.
So in other words, those medical researchers who've been courageous enough to go public with their findings that this is a dangerous thing, the company's trying to get information which will discredit them in court so that damage suits will be decided in favor of the company.
Right. Mm-hmm.
What was it like when, I mean, you yourself in researching this story, you dealt with the company yourself. Didn't you have to call them up and get information from them and force them to tell you things? What was it like dealing with those folks?
Actually, it was a lot of fun. They had never heard of Mother Jones. And I don't know why they chose to talk to us. I spoke on the phone with their attorney, Fred Lamb, who we mentioned in the story, who is one of their key figures and has been. He was a key figure in thalidomide and MER-29. And he treated me like a little girl, you know, like I was a little researcher working with a big reporter. And we stayed on the phone for 2-3 hours chatting, and he made an offer at one point. I was calling him, and we had talked on the phone for an hour, and he said, "Carolyn, I want to meet you. I know that you are a nice person. And so I want to fly you to Cincinnati. I'll take you out to dinner. I'll wine you and dine you. There's the best roast beef dinner at one of our finest restaurants. It's one of the finest restaurants in the nation." And believe me, I was really tempted because I thought, wow, what a great opportunity.
Free trip to Cincinnati. Doesn't happen every day.
Yeah. And then, of course, the co-author, Mark Dowie, said, no, because you'll probably end up liking this guy as a person. You know, that's their ploy. They want you to like them because, you know, they obviously, it's much easier to deal with somebody when you can't see them and can't talk
right.
to them. And he sort of harped on that for a long time, that we should definitely come out to see him, and then he even wanted to come out to see us. Because obviously that's his trick. That's his mm-hmm. way of getting to authors by dealing with them in person. You know,
make you feel that it's an honorable man you're dealing
yes.
with.
Yes, and he apparently showed up in one of the congressional offices one day, and one of the congressional aides said, "He is so charming. It's just really unbelievable. I can't believe this guy is lying to the FDA." And that's sort of the way they operate.
It's sort of interesting and sad when you consider that undoubtedly lawyers like this are hired because of their ability to charm people.
Oh, yeah.
In a funny way, also, it probably is structured in such a way that he doesn't have to lie, or he doesn't have to say information that he knows is untrue, because he says what's given to him by the drug company, presumably by Richardson Merrill. The people who know that it's untrue are officials back at the company. They don't have to do the talking.
This guy was so trusting of Bendectin, he gave it to his daughter, who was pregnant while we were doing the story.
Really?
And I couldn't believe it. I mean, it was almost like he believed so much in what he was doing that he had to prove it, and he was going to use his daughter as a guinea pig. So he gave the drug to his daughter, who wasn't even suffering severe vomiting. She was just having mild nausea.
Really?
And I bet every night he went to bed praying that she wouldn't have any defects. And I mean, I would have been. It would have been tragic and sad if there, if his daughter had a child
right.
with defects. But
well, one doesn't like to say it would serve them right in such an instance.
No,
but still, you can't have help having that thought in a way. Did you deal with anyone else from the company, or was he the main person?
Oh, we tried calling a lot of people from the company.
Were they trying to press you to see what information you had?
I guess at one point they were. I mean, we were lucky, actually. Most of the time, they really didn't know who we were.
Mm-hmm.
I remember somebody, one guy who was one of their chief researchers, Holtkamp, Dorsey Holtkamp, chief of medical research, got on the phone with me. This was after they found out who we were, and I said, Dr. Holtkamp? And he said, yes. I said, I wanted to ask you a couple of questions about Bendectin. I'm calling for Mother Jones. He said, hold on a minute, okay? Just hold on. So basically what happened was that was the response we got from most people. They didn't want to talk to us, and we went through Fred Lamb, who is, you know, known to be their charmer. And I think once they found out who we were, toward the end of the article, actually, Fred Lamb did try to find out what we were going to say, and he kept saying, I hope you're going to be responsible. I've spent a lot of time with you. And I said, hey, we're just going to tell the truth. And, you know.
What, you also got a lot of your information, didn't you, from parents of kids who had been born with birth defects? Were there any of those cases which particularly stuck in your mind? I know in the article you cite a family where I believe the father was an obstetrician and prescribed the drug to his wife, and some of their kids were born with defects and some without.
Yeah, I would say that for personal information, certainly mothers helped to explain what their situation, what it was like for them to have a deformed child, because in dealing with documents, you sometimes lose track of that. You forget what, you know, that this is affecting people.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just a bunch of statistics in a scientific study, that mothers, you know, who are the, you know, 2 to 5 of the, you know, women who have the defected child are searching to find out whether they are genetically, there's something wrong with them, whether you know, maybe there's something wrong with the husband. Maybe it's in the family history. You know, they don't associate it with the drug. And they were very helpful. Obviously, I can't really tell you what other sources we use because we have to sort of protect them. But there's a lot of information that we did obtain through Freedom of Information.
So you have no easy advice for reporters wanting to break drug-related scandals like this in the future?
I don't know. I really don't.
You know, I'm interested that, in a way, there do seem to be these days more and more scandals relating to drugs which were hitherto thought safe. And you mention at one point in your article, you quote somebody saying, we are faced with an epidemic of teratogenesis, you know, babies born deformed. This is surely one of the most awful things that can happen to any parents having a child. Why is this of epidemic proportions right now? Are there many other drugs that are increasingly being taken during pregnancy?
A lot of times women are on drugs, for example, high estrogen birth control pills, or on other drugs, aspirin, antihistamines, and they get pregnant and they don't know it. And they're continuing to take the drug until you don't find out that you're pregnant the day after you got pregnant. Usually it takes a month, usually, until you start your next period and you realize you didn't get it and you're
mm-hmm.
pregnant. So that's one problem.
In other words, drugs taken by somebody who didn't realize she was pregnant
mm-hmm.
at the time, whereas it was a drug that you might not have taken if you'd realized you were pregnant.
Right. And I think also, you know, you can look at a drug, let's say aspirin. Aspirin is a teratogen during the last trimester of pregnancy.
Really?
Yeah. Vitamin D, I believe it's D or E, is supposedly a teratogen. Vitamins. Now, clearly any doctor will prescribe vitamins.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact of the matter is that we really don't know that much about the drugs we're taking. You know, you may test, let's say, aspirin for effectiveness in getting rid of a cold, but was it ever tested for teratogenicity? Well, why would it be? It's not prescribed for that. You know, you take it for something else. And, you know, this is a drug-related society. We medicate ourselves all the time. We're constantly, you know, you have a headache, you take an aspirin. I mean, what else would you do?
This is presumably aspirin in large quantities or over a long period of time.
I'm not sure, actually. I think it's over a long period of time.
Yeah, but a lot of people do take it every day.
Sure.
You've been listening to Common Ground with Mother Jones editor Adam Hochschild interviewing author Carolyn Marshall about her research on the drug Benedictine.